Does everyone know what time it is? It's time for 1313 Harbor, the podcast hosted by Jasmine and her friends.
Welcome to 1313 Harbor, the podcast brought to you by Blue Milk. Blue Milk, it does a body fine, I guess. It has a lot of sugar in it, even though it tastes really good. I'm Jasmine, and this week I'm bringing you a very, very special episode. So Dame Fino, who is a friend of the podcast, one of my best friends, one of the patron saints of this podcast, she and I got together and interviewed Matthew Serrano about his documentary, Live from the Space Stage, A Halix Story. I highly recommend, before listening to this podcast, going and watching this video. It's on the Defunct Land YouTube channel, and I'm also going to link it below in the description. So you can just search for it on YouTube, Live from the Space Stage, A Halix Story, and you should be able to find it. I've talked about Matt previously. He made the documentary Remain Seated, Please. I talked about it in the Horizons episode. It's the Chief and Hoot documentary. I highly recommend watching that as well. I am a huge fan of Matt's, as you can tell from the interview. I gush a lot, so this was very, very exciting to me. This interview was done for the Galactic Coven Celebration Weekend, and you can watch the first half of this interview on their IGTV, but this is the only place you can get the full interview. I really hope you enjoy listening to this interview as much as I had making it. It was a blast. I'm a huge fan, as you can tell, and I hope you learn some great things about Halix, and I highly, highly, highly recommend watching Matt's documentaries. So without further ado, on to the show.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us to talk about Live from the Space Stage, a documentary about Disneyland's forgotten Star Wars-inspired band Halix and the impact that the Star Wars saga has had over the years in the Disney parks. As a member of the Galactic Coven, we are putting on a virtual celebration event this weekend. So I am kind of standing in here as the non-expert. So I will mostly be allowing Jasmine of 1313 Podcast and Matthew, the director, producer, entrepreneur, everything, to kind of take over the rest of this discussion. But I will definitely be adding some colorful commentary. So,
don't sell yourself short. You're very knowledgeable.
I just really love to make colorful commentary. I like to make a jab. I'm here for a joke and to dress up, obviously. Well, if you're listening to the podcast, not so obviously.
They can look up your fine pictures at Dame Fino.
That's me.
Well, hi, Matt. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me on, guys. Thanks for that wonderful intro, Allison.
Oh, thank you so much. I wrote it at 3 in the morning last night. I was very prepared.
I love the inclusion of entrepreneur. You're missing out on leading, like, intellectual when it comes to useless Halix knowledge.
I mean, now that we are starting
leading
a cult
Halix expert
about Halix, I feel like maybe that will be actually of great use.
I'm like that one guy who invented the Na'vi language. And all of the fans of Avatar go to him, like, asking questions about stuff. That's like me now with Halix.
So this episode is about your documentary, and also we're going to talk about Star Wars at the Disney parks, because who doesn't love Star Wars? So
don't tell us if you don't. Keep it to yourself. Yeah,
why are you watching this if you don't? I just wanted to say, I was talking before we were recording, I love Remain Seated, Please, A Hoot and Chief Story, which was a documentary that you did. I talked about it on my podcast. I just wanted to fangirl for a moment and say how much I love it again.
Oh, please, fangirl away. Thank you.
It's great. You can watch it on your YouTube channel, correct?
Yeah, with just my name, Matthew Serrano.
And there's also commentary, which I watched. I discovered it the other night, and I watched it, and I was very happy.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I saw a lot of people were happy about the commentary. I made that on a week when I had, like, a little bit of downtime working on this new doc, Live from the Space Stage. So I'm glad that people liked it.
Yes, it was Vera. I love a good commentary too, but it was nice to get a little more insight into it. Okay, so now we'll move on to Live from the Space Stage, A Halix Story. So it's screening right now on YouTube on the Defunct Land channel. Go watch it now. I contributed. I was one of the Indiegogo people, so you can see my name in the credits in the J section. How would
congratulations.
You
congratulations.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining.
How would you summarize the documentary?
Live from the Space Age, A Halix Story is like a rockumentary, except for a band that didn't make it. You know, there's a lot of documentaries about, you know, bands that we all know and love, but Halix is a band that in 1981, Disney tried combining, well, let's see what's popular. You know, Kiss is popular right now, and Star Wars is popular. So they took those two ideas and they combined them together into a band that is so unbelievable that you have to see it in our doc to believe it, called Helix. And they performed for one summer. The venue of choice was the Space Stage, which was a venue underneath Space Mountain. And our documentary is about the creation of the band, them performing, and then ultimately showcasing why the band didn't work out and why it didn't continue after that one summer. And in the documentary, we feature, I mean, there are photos and there's photos, concept art, recordings, video footage that has never been seen before. It is, we went through personal archives and we were able to find things that not even Disney was able to provide for us. So yeah, anyone who is interested, please watch. It's free on YouTube.
It's really good. I've already watched it twice.
Awesome.
If I had had more time, I would have watched it more. So what is your relationship with theme park history like? Because I noticed the two documentaries I'm familiar with are about, they're interesting stories about theme park history.
Well, I've been a huge fan of theme parks ever since like I can remember, you know, and I think that there's so many, you know, when you're passionate about something, you start going on these like nerdy deep dives and you just go down one rabbit hole and another rabbit hole until you believe that you're the leading expert in some obscure thing. And then you find out that there are other nerds like you who also know as much about whatever it is you're passionate about as you do. And so one of my interests is just theme parks in general, but most of the Disney parks and Disneyland in particular. And yeah, some of these stories are just so fascinating. And, you know, these are real people involved. I think a lot of people write off theme parks as not an art form, but I think it is a high art form that should be taken much more seriously, you know? And there's a lot of craftsmanship and a lot of art and a lot of thought that goes into these themed entertainment things, you know? And so, yeah, it's something that doesn't really get talked about a lot. And so it just so happens that, you know, my last two documentaries that I've made are about, you know, theme park stories.
And I think it's so great because there's not a lot of there's not documentation on a lot of these things. So it's great that like future nerd theme park nerds can go in instead of like, because there's not a lot of information on Helix. That's one of the few things I actually had never even heard of until I heard about your documentary. And I think it was on Podcast The Ride too. They talked about it. And so it's just great to have this. I'm just going to gush now. It's just great to have this for future generations. And to me, yeah, it is an art form because Disney, and not just Disney, other theme parks, they put so much thought into everything and so much detail that it's great to be studied. And that's one of the reasons I love the Remain Seated Please documentary is because the Hoot and Chief actually went in and documented how I think every ride that is around should be documented. Like, I want to see everything. Disney puts so much detail in everything, and I just want to see it close up.
Yeah, that's what's pretty amazing about what Hoot & Chief did. And for those that don't know, the documentary Remain Seated Please is about these two guys who actually snuck around this old ride, Horizons, at Epcot while it was still open and while it was running. They would jump out of the ride vehicles and run around the sets filming every little detail and everything about the ride.
For hours.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for hours and hours and hours. And what's crazy is, you know, they document things. For one, the ride is very poorly documented. Disney has nothing saved about the ride. It's an amazing, incredible ride that should absolutely be remembered and even taught about to people, you know, that like this kind of stuff.
Yeah, they should get like, I know Disney would never do this. They should get some sort of reward or some like, not, like award or like made Disney legends. I don't know. I just think
I have heard from behind the scenes that there are a couple little touches and little nods to them. Like I believe when you're leaving Space Mountain at Walt Disney World, there's that section that's kind of a reference to Horizons, and a lot of the sets that you see while you're exiting are kind of reminiscent of Horizons. And I don't know if it's there or not, but I believe there's a suitcase there that does have Mesa Verde on it, and it's half a reference to their blog called Mesa Verde Times and also half a reference to Horizons. But I've also heard that Hoot told me that, and I don't know if this is true, this is what Hoot said. Hoot said that, you know, his wife went by Sunnyside on the blog, since they all had kind of code names. They heard from Pixar that they were like, hey, you know, we love you guys, we love your blog, you should come visit our studio sometime. And they're like, oh yeah, sure. And then they're like, oh, and by the way, there's a reference to you guys in our new movie. And they're like, oh, what's that? And they're like, Toy Story 3. Well, what's the reference? Well, when you see the school name come up, you'll see. And the preschool is called Sunnyside. Yeah.
Oh
and
God.
Apparently they've heard from the inside that that's a reference to their blog.
Oh my gosh. I believe it. Pixar are like the bad boys of the Disney world.
I believe it.
Oh yeah. I've heard there's some high up people at Pixar that have reached out to Hoot and Chief. So they definitely get some appreciation and love.
Oh, good. Okay. That makes me happy because they deserve it. So when did you first hear about Helix?
The same way that you were saying, Kevin and I from Defunctland, we were talking about, you know, what would be a project that we could collaborate on, because he saw my doc Remain Seated Please and he was like, you should make something for my channel. And I was like, absolutely, I'm a huge fan of Defunctland. Heck yeah, I'd love to. And so we were talking about a lot of different ideas, and just he threw out the name Helix, and when I googled it and saw it, I was like, how did you find out about this? This is crazy. Because, you know, you look at the poster and it's so insane, because, you know, at first in your head registers Star Wars, but then you read the word Disney and you realize that this is before they owned Star Wars, and you realize it's a knockoff, but it doesn't register as a knockoff. Because when you think about knockoffs, you know, typically the word that's associated with knockoff is, you know, you associate that with low effort.
Mm-hmm.
But this didn't look like something with low effort. This looked like something with a lot of effort put into it, the kind of effort that you would expect from a Disney production. And so, yeah, when I asked him where he heard it from, he also told me that he heard it from Podcast The Ride, which apparently Scott, one of the co-hosts, found out about it from a guy who had seen them. You know, there are a couple of people out there that have seen them and remember them. And,
congratulations to them.
I know, right? Yeah, and so that was how I found out about it. We went and we looked at the blog that was up, because there was one blog talking about them. I listened to the 3 audio recordings at the time that were available on YouTube. Now there are a lot more, which is awesome.
Oh, good.
And that was it. And he told me, he was like, this is what you're doing. You're getting the band back together. And he hung up the phone and I was like, wait, hold on. Because, you know, my last documentary, Remain Seated, you know, when I was starting off with that, it was like, okay, you know, here's this idea. I want to tell these guys' story, you know, because I had seen the video of spoilers for both documentaries. I had seen, you know, the last upload on Hoot's channel, which was him burying Chief's ashes in Walt Disney World. And I was like, all right, this is a story. There's a bigger story here. And so, you know, looking at the channel, I was like, okay, well, here's all these videos that no one has seen. Let me go through and try to make a cohesive story about this. So that's how I started off with that. Now imagine me, Helix has dropped into my hands and I'm going, okay, so I have a poster, a few pieces of concept art, 1 or 2 photos of them performing on stage, 3 audio recordings, and I already know that the lead singer is dead. This is 38 years ago, 39 now, 38 at the time of me starting production. If we already know the lead singer is dead, we don't even know who else is still around with us. We'll be lucky if we can find anybody and if anyone is still alive. And then on top of that, this is something that performed for one summer in 1981. Did anyone film this? Did anyone take photos of this? How am I going to make a documentary about this? It was a really scary thing at the beginning. And it was just so crazy how slowly over time, you know, the people were coming out of the woodworks, and we would find one person and one person would lead us to the next band member or the next producer. And that person had photos or this person had footage. And that's how we slowly put together the documentary from there.
I'm just so amazed that you were able to get everyone together, because it's not like there's a Rolodex with like, oh, here's the bassist, here's the drummer. And so I'm also fighting the urge to like go scene by scene and be like, this is why this scene's amazing. And this is why this scene's amazing. It's almost like, this is going to sound so pretentious, like Citizen Kane-esque, that you kind of went backwards and then told a story through, not through a death, but that was kind of your starting point.
Yeah, with the production,
without
you
making
mean.
That the obvious yeah. starting point. Like,
right.
You know, they don't go, hello, welcome to the story. Guess what? Someone's
1981.
Oh, so you're going to find out. Yeah. You're going to find out, you know, who didn't get interviewed. You know, no, yeah. We didn't set out trying to make it like that. But Yeah, I mean, it's just so crazy, you know, like, you know, you would be, we'd be working for 4 months on this thing going, are we going to have to do like an animated recreation of how we think they would have looked on stage? You know, because we would hear the stories of, oh yeah, well, the little frog guy would climb on a rope. So we're like, okay, are we going to have to film what that would have looked like, you know? And so it was 4 months in that I finally found the drummer. And I'm talking to him on Facebook Messenger, and he goes, oh yeah, hey, looks good memories. You know, I was just watching the footage the other day, and my heart like exploded, and I went, what? And like started smashing my keyboard back, going like, do you still have that footage? Where is it? How, when can you get it to me? You know, it was just so crazy how everything unfolded over time. But it was a really, really slow, long process to get to that point.
How long from when you talked to Kevin Perger to wrapping up the edit, how long did that process take?
Oh, geez. Well, you know, I can tell you that it took a year to get that first cut to him. Because, you know, we started this, you know, halfway through January, and about halfway through December that same year, I gave him the first cut and I said, here is our film. Here is our feature film. Because, you know, 6 months prior to that, we had done, you know, our Indiegogo where we promised, hey, if we meet our goal, we'll turn this into a feature film. Because originally it was going to be a 45-minute video for the Defunctland channel. And so from there, it was, we filmed one more interview we were able to squeeze in, and it was with Rick, the guy that you see at the very beginning of the film, because we were struggling with, you know, how do we open the movie? You know, it's a really hard thing to figure out, because how do you open this movie where you don't want to immediately just go, here's why you're watching the movie. Look at this crazy band. Okay, now stick around for another 20 minutes. You know, because we don't want to spoil how the band looks or anything like that right out the gate. But then it's like, how do you create some sort of intrigue? And so we found that guy, Rick, and he told us, or he told me on Facebook Messenger, he was like, fun fact, Alex was my first concert. And I thought, well, that's great. What an awesome way to start a movie with, you know, this guy talking about the first concert that he saw. And then you go, well, wait, what did the band look like? And it was so crazy.
Where do you begin? what a loaded question.
Right? And it was just so crazy that, you know, we went back and forth scheduling with him. We interviewed him. We drove up to LA to meet with him. We filmed the interview, and he goes, I'm like, great, you know, interview went awesome. Thank you so much for coming. He gets up. We're packing our equipment. He opens up his phone and he goes, this just in, Disneyland is closing for coronavirus. We literally filmed our final interview the day that everything started to go into lockdown.
Oh my gosh. I was thinking that actually the whole time. I'm like, oh, like that's great that this was filmed before lockdown. Because
could not have been more perfect timing. We finished that last interview. And so from, I think it was March 13th was that the day that everything went into lockdown. So from March 13th all the way till August 20th, you know, we were editing that sucker till the very last second. I watched the movie three times through August 19th through August 20th for any last errors and stuff. So we were really pushing it. But so probably then that means like April, May, June, July, August, 5 months of serious hardcore editing and fine tuning.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And I had to edit. And yeah, you get to that point where you're like, is this a cut right here? Or am I going crazy? Is there a flash screen? So that's amazing that you could watch it three times in one day. Because
right, it was nothing after the 400 times I had already seen it.
You just sang the lines with it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So what was the process? You kind of touched on this a little bit already, but what was the process of shooting like?
Well, it was really fun. You know, it was very hard to get in contact with people because, you know, no offense to the 55 and up crowd, but you know, if you message someone under the age of 55 on Facebook Messenger, they'll get back to you within the next 5 minutes. There were some people that we messaged who didn't realize that. That's something I feel like, sorry to generalize, but I feel like the 55 and up crowd does not generally realize that Facebook and Facebook Messenger are connected. So we would have some people that would get back in a week, a few days. Some people got back in a month, 2 months. We had one person who did not get back to us for 9 months.
Oh, wow.
That's my kind of timeline right there, to be honest. I was like, I don't even have Facebook Messenger.
I just had this conversation with my mom, by the way, so that's why I'm laughing, teaching her what Facebook Messenger is.
You know, some of us just prefer a note in the mail. Quarantine is great for us. It's so quiet.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard tracking down people. I mean, and another hard thing was, you know, like, for example, tracking down the drummer. It's like, okay, we know his name, Brian Lucas. So you go online, you don't find any Brian Lucas. So you go, okay, well, I'm going to hit up Facebook. And there's 100 white guys that look the exact same. And you go, which one was the drummer in Halix? You know, I don't know.
Who wore this outfit with the sheer mesh bits?
With the tubes around him.
Yeah. My favorite outfit.
I love the way he was like, this guy wouldn't wear it. So I had to wear it. Ooh, look at this. I was like, this is the kind of attitude I just love to watch. Like, I'm here. I'm not into it. But I'm doing it.
If I were ever to teach a filmmaking seminar about, like, you know, doesn't matter, documentaries or anything like that, I'd be like, this is how you build characters. This is how you showcase to an audience your characters. And I feel like Bruce and Brian highlight that perfectly of, you know, the type of guy that Bruce is just by him saying that. And you know the type of guy Brian is just by him being like, so I guess I had to be the one to wear the costume, you know, it was uncomfortable and it was weird, but whatever, you know, you don't have to say anything about them. They can showcase it for themselves.
I love the part where they were talking about all the ladies, like the groupies that they had, and they were like, I want the Wookiee. Like,
I've got to say, I can see the same documentary happening in like 20 years about Mad Tea Party. Like, I see this happening. Like, I was like, oh, that's that one. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know who those people are.
I like Tuesday Mad Hatter.
I just love that, like, he was getting propositioned. I was like, this is, I could watch this forever. Granted, I do think it's great the way it is, but I could dig into this just like a couple weekend thing for a long time.
Early 80s were crazy time.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that Wookiee thing is me and my girlfriend Bree were talking about it, where we were going like, yeah, what is that? You know, because she was like, you know, I've talked about this with a lot of my girlfriends, you know, where we're like, You see the Chewbacca walking around at Galaxy's Edge, and you're just in your mind thinking, like, he has to be hot underneath that suit. What is that? Is it because he's tall? Is it because he's furry?
I will tell you, I believe it is an issue of a couple of things. Tall is always, women love tall. It's across the board. Are you tall? Great. Congratulations. You are 100% there. You have to be strong enough to kind of do the job. You know, I'm sure it's like hot.
That's another thing. Yeah, the physicality of it.
And then the third, maybe the most important thing besides tall, is that you have to have like a personality that you're willing to do things. You're kind of probably like somewhat fun loving. You're easygoing. You don't take yourself so seriously that you're like, I can't wear this suit. Like, ugh. And yeah, it is. There's something about that you go like, yeah. You get just cool points for... You know,
he seems nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the case of Halix's Wookiee, quote unquote, the Baharnath, their bassist, he was crazier than Chewbacca, because he was rolling around on stage, smashing his bass, roaring, you know, and doing bass solos. And I have a theory going back to what we were talking about. You know, I told Bri, I was like, you know what I honestly think that it is? I think that it's socialized. I think that there are lots of things socialized into us as young girls, young boys, where, you know, it's in the stories that we read, you know, and my theory is that it's the knight in shining armor thing, because every little girl like story, every like princess fairy tale story, it's always like, you know, the faceless knight comes to the rescue of the girl, and then the princess goes, you know, oh, you know, take off the helmet, and it's always someone that's absolutely gorgeous underneath the helmet. So I feel like subconsciously, deep down, that's like something that's stuck around with a lot of women.
Very interesting.
Also,
it's like you want to believe. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yep. You know, like you start to think about it. Beauty and the Beast is another one.
Now I'm like, this is just Hollywood brainwashing.
Absolutely.
Because it's just like everyone in Hollywood is hot. So of course, no one has ever looked like an average human since like 1930s, you know, in the movies. Yeah. Everyone's so beautiful. Even if he wasn't like the hottest person in the movie, he's still hot.
Yeah.
And in the case of Halen's, the Baharnik was played by the sweetest, cutest guy.
Most precious and adorable. Most precious.
I like when he's like white hair.
Oh, yeah. White hair. It's all the same. He just did that. It was so funny. It was at the end of our interview. I was like, can we like have like a shot of you just holding the frame? And then he just did that. And we were busting laughing behind the camera. And so, Roger's like the best. He's the nicest guy.
So we've kind of talked, we've like teased the costumes a bit. So Halix, it was a band that was put together. It was like they auditioned. They were very talented musicians and they each had like a character. So I had this question at the end, but I'm going to put it now. What's everyone's favorite band member costume?
Oh, that's a really good question. For me, I got to say, like if I were to wear one of the costumes, it's between Laura's jacket and Bruce's jacket, because I think that both of their outfits are really cool.
So there was a Wookiee, I forget, what did you call it? It started with a B.
The Baharnith.
Baharnith character, which it like had white fur. There was a guy, was there like a Davros kind of guy? He had like a robot guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't have a name, but the fans lovingly named him Mott Relum, which is Tom Miller backwards, because that's the guy's name. They called him Mott Relum, and they gave him a subtitle, Beethoven from Space, because he would play Baroque sort of sounding, you know, keyboard solos. And so they called him Mott Relum Beethoven from Space.
There was a frog dancer. There were a guy, which I don't know if ironically or unironically, this is my favorite one, with like, because there's some nips involved.
Yeah, and the nipples. There's the sheer and like the gold.
Part
of
me
says I would want to wear it, but I don't know as a lady how well that would work out for me.
It's like Rainbow Bright-esque. Like with the...
Realistically, I obviously love Laura's vibe. Like I said, she, when they right off the bat say she's a punk rock Snow White, I'm like, oh. Yeah. I was like, oh, my twin from another life.
That's me.
I was like, I understand her automatically.
I'm glad because I told you for months and months and months, I don't know if you remember, I'd be like, Allison, listen, you're going to be all over the Laura. You better be all over the Laura.
I'm halfway there. I'm working on it.
I'm glad that you've seen the doc finally.
Disco pants. Also, I did notice her pants, not only are they like shiny metallic, they had like little sparkly like gemstones on there.
Gemstones.
I was like, this is a big project. Although I will also say, besides her jacket and iconic pants, which I do think is amazing, I love her poster look, the very dramatic hair flowing. Yeah. I think it's more like a romper dress, maybe the red. Either way, I'm down for it. Like red is literally my favorite color. I think she's amazing.
It's cool because she's doing the pose that Luke does in that one famous A New Hope poster, but it's her doing it and the legs standing out, you know, like it, and the beam of light coming out of her hands. It's so awesome.
I will say, like you did mention earlier, Matt, I do think it's pretty amazing to think that it's obviously inspired by Star Wars. Like, there's no denying anything. But I do think the beats and the amount of actual things that were still creative and different is actually, like, really commendable. Like, when you look at it, like, there's enough to go, okay, this is loosely Chewbacca, and this is, like, the Leia or Luke thing. But it still doesn't feel to me at all like other things you see now when it's like blatantly, you know, photocopied, but like the wrong direction. Like it still does feel like genuinely like it could stand entirely on its own. Like maybe I'm a little partial at this point because I've like decided to love them.
You couldn't
but
help
it. But it's very like,
you
I'm
can't
just,
help
like,
it.
I feel like it still like took a pretty creative turn, especially like considering Disney and like the way they usually are, you know, pretty strict. Jailbait. Yeah.
There is a song called Jailbait that they sing, and it is a very fun point in the documentary.
it's a really good example of you know, how far, you know, how much the generations have grown when it comes to moral things like that, because, you know, it really says a lot about, you know, the generation of older people back then and the generation of people watching the Halix doc now, that people in the comments are pointing out it's so ridiculous that Disneyland was so like, you can't play this loud music and you can't have the people standing up and dancing and no long hair. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't care about them singing Jailbait to kids.
I love Ron Miller was just like, eh.
But also, like, in the documentary, don't they specifically make a point that, like, jailbait kind of, like, in that context was kind of just becoming a thing, like, mm-hmm. even in, like, the world scheme of things? So it's kind of like a hot button type issue for Disney to be fine with, considering, you know, even a couple years ago, back to Mad Tea Party, and that, like, you know, playlist was, like, you know, 1999, or like, let's go crazy. Like, they're like, we need at least 20-year-old songs that are gonna pass.
And the thing about Jailbait too, that's so funny, is you gotta rewind back everything that we're saying. Keep in mind, like, you know, obviously it's wrong. It's not okay to be singing about this, and you know, nothing that I'm about to say justifies it. But that being said, it's interesting going back to 1981 and thinking about, you know, here's this young female songwriter walking into Disney and going, you know, not, this obviously isn't the pitch, but in her mind, she's thinking, you know what? Like, you got all these guys singing about wanting to be with young girls. Let's flip the script. Mm-hmm. And like almost making it being like at that time, like forward thinking, progressive, like kind of like, oh, I never really, you're right. Like you always, when you hear Jailbait, you always think about older guy, younger girl. You would never think, well, what if the pages are turned and the girl saying, well, you're going to have to wait, little boy. Like she talks down to him.
That is a good,
I've literally never loved anything more in my life. Like I truly was like 100%. Like, yeah. Sign some petition? I don't know. Like,
to add to the kind of irony of it too, it was written by not just a female songwriter, a gay female songwriter. So it's almost even more just laughable, just making fun of the whole Jailbait thing too, because, you know, you always think of the Jailbait thing as being such a heterosexual mm-hmm. thing. You know, you never associate it with that stuff.
It is cool. And the song is like, makes a point of like, no, I can't be with you because you're Jailbait. So it's not like, oh, maybe. Like, it is very clear.
But it is weird though, because she says, baby, I want you.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're Jailbait. It's still really weird. Like we're saying, it's not okay. It's not okay.
You know.
But it is very interesting.
The heart wants.
I will turn you down respectfully. It's not as catchy when you say it like that.
Yeah. She's like, we know I'm not going to do it, but.
And then the biggest irony of it all is, isn't this band supposed to like not exist on Earth?
Yeah,
so, you know,
what are the space rules?
Because even on our planet Earth, you know, you go to a different country and they have different rules. You go to another country and they have completely different rules. So it's like even funnier that, you know, they're like in space. You know,
the laws of consent are very important in Halix land.
And also, how do you measure years in other universes and galaxies and stuff, you know? Because
I was gonna say, how about love and just make it about rent? Do you measure in love? No,
only
just think
cups
about
of coffee.
Songs I've heard.
Measure in light years. That would actually be a great Halix song.
Light years. You are 4 light years, so you're 10,000 billion years old. I don't know science.
I mean, just like checks out.
Clearly, we don't like science because we love Star Wars.
Yes,
you know, we're not Trekkies.
No,
we are science
fantasy and not science fiction.
What were some roadblocks that you ran into while making the documentary?
That's a really good question. Well, kind of going back a little bit to talking about how we were able to bring all the interviewees together. Probably the biggest roadblock in the early part of production and writing the story and doing the research was that, you know, you have to think there's not books about Halix. There technically is one book. It's called Mouse Tracks, and it was a blurb mentioned by Bambi because she was interviewed for the book. So she told them, well, hey, you should also mention this band called Halix. And so they mention it in the book for a brief moment. But aside from that, you know, there's Jim Magon's blog post. He wrote the 3 audio recordings from a fan, which, by the way, those song titles necessarily aren't the titles for the song. They're just what that fan assumed the title of the songs were, and just whatever everyone remembered. And so it was really hard because, you know, I would get information from people and go, okay, write it down. And I had a Halix Bible. That was basically my way of going, okay, I have new information. Should I you know, should I mark off this? Should I add it to this? You know, and I basically was, you know, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, it's kind of true. I am the leading expert in Helix knowledge because I would go to interviews to interview people and they would say, we played in 1982. And I would go, you're wrong. You played in 1981, actually. And it was really weird to do that in interviews where I'm trying to get more information out of them. And so
those light years, they just feel different.
Yeah.
Yes, right, as we were talking about before. And so, you know, one example of that that's crazy is, you know, there's so the guy who plays the little frog guy, who's the acrobat percussionist on stage, for the longest time, we knew the name was Tony Caputo. For who the performer was. And I would look up online and go, Tony Caputo, Tony Caputo. And it was almost like there was no such thing as Tony Caputo anywhere. It was almost like that person did not exist. So I was like, okay. And you know, it's really driving me crazy. And then finally the stage manager, she looked through her old photos and she was like, here's a photo. And it's the final photo that you see in the documentary. It's that behind the scenes group shot where you see all the techs and you see them out of their costume and you see, you know, Roger's got the black makeup around his eyes and things like that. And Tony is there with his helmet, with his frog mask off. So I was like, okay, we have a face. But I would still look and I'm like, Tony Caputo, Tony Caputo. Cannot find this Tony Caputo. So finally I meet Bambi and she gives me that blank jacket sleeve, the empty jacket sleeve that she had everyone sign. And she gave that to me to look over before our interview. So I'm looking through all this stuff. And there's all these autographs all over the jacket. And I'm looking and I'm like, oh yeah, here's one from Bruce and here's one from Laura and here's one from Tony Coppola. Tony Coppola, oh my God. And I went to Google and I typed in Tony Coppola and because I had the photo to reference, I found him. And as it turns out, Tony Coppola is an easy guy to find because he is a dancing legend. He literally has a tap shoe named after him. It is a famous tap dance shoe. Oh yeah. And you know, it was great, you know, like going out, we went to Vegas to go interview him because that's where he lives. And it's so crazy. Like if you go to any, he literally can get, he told me, he was like, you know, come back to Vegas. I'll get you into any Cirque du Soleil show you want. Because pretty much half the performers in every Cirque du Soleil show, he either knows or taught.
Oh my gosh. Know?
So, and even my mom, I told her about it. My mom in the 70s was big into dance. And she was like, oh my God, that the Tony Coppola? I was like, yeah.
She's like, my friend Tony, tell me. You were trying to get in touch with him.
Yeah, it was really hard, you know, trying to make something that, you know, you're relying on people who were there, on their memory. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people's memory of things is wrong. Mm. So that was definitely the biggest struggle.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. So,
was there anyone who, besides Laura, who you didn't get an interview with?
No, we pretty much got an interview with everybody. You know, there was one guy. There's a part in the documentary where I won't spoil the song, but you know, there's that one Celtic song mm-hmm. that they sang for two performances, Fionnuala. That was, I believe, and his name's escaping me, but he was basically Mike Post's right-hand man, where he was like the music director. And so he was in charge of helping them out during rehearsals. And it's funny, I reached out to him and I was like, hey, do you want to be involved in a documentary? And I even told him, you know, that we were trying to get Gary Kreisel, Mike Post, all these people involved. And he told me just, well, you know, like, listen, I'll be honest with you. I've done a million things in my career. And that was almost 40 years ago. That was almost four decades ago. I don't remember much from it. So I wouldn't be of much help. And I was like, that's fair, honestly. And so, yeah, it was him and really nobody else. You know, there wasn't really anyone else besides, you know, we tried to get, you know, I felt like it was important to get the background singers in the documentary. And we scheduled for a long, long time. And so luckily we were able to get Jeanette Klinger in the mm-hmm. doc. But the other background singer, Tommy Lee Bradley, just was going through a lot in her life. And so she's like, I'm sorry for keeping you waiting for months, but I really can't. And so, yeah, aside from them, you know, we're really fortunate that we were able to get everyone in the documentary. You know, it's crazy.
I'm just like, as someone who's like had to produce movies, I'm just so impressed that you were able to get everybody, because it's literally, you have nothing. I feel like Chris Farley, you know, in that SNL sketch where he's like, you know, when you did this, That was awesome.
Thank you. No, don't worry about it. No, it was much appreciated. You know, it's really nice, you know, because like, you know, I mean, even Allison here can, I don't even know if she can vouch for it or not, but, you know, anytime I would tell anybody about what I was doing, including Allison and so many other people, every time I would feel like a crazy person telling them about Helix and be like, yeah, you know, it's like, it's crazy. We got all this footage. And I feel like everyone would go like, yeah, sure, that's cool.
No.
Yeah,
so I would, no, I was going to say, I remember around Thanksgiving time when you got,
when
someone
we did the
got
Friendsgiving.
Back to you about photos and it was like, can you believe like there's photos and like this guy might have this stuff. I do think it's something that's, it's kind of hard to understand until
it
you
is
see
really
it.
Hard to pitch.
Cause it's, yeah. I mean, it is literally like a Star Wars inspired, but not really, which actually would be the thing. The question I would have for you the most, because it does kind of sound like Kevin was the one like, hey, this is the thing for you to go do. So as a filmmaker, as you kind of like saw the story unfold in front of your own eyes, like, did it end up being a lot different than you thought? Was like Helix something that like ended up being a lot more compelling to you than you had personally anticipated? Like when you started thinking like, oh, this is just, you know, some crazy band thing at Disney.
Yeah, I think for me, I was going into it with the mindset of, well, this is a fun idea, so let's make a fun documentary. And mm-hmm. Kevin was really early on pushing me, well, what's the conflict? And what are the themes? And all of these things where I would just go, well, isn't the Wookiee bass player funny looking? Is he silly? And he'd be like, no, like you know, like you got to draw more from this story. And he was really pushing for that. And I would go, well, it's easier said than done because, you know, I'm working with what's being given to me. It's not like I can ask, you know, Brian, hey, did you really hate Bruce? Did you really hate this guy? You know, do you want to go into that for an hour? You know, it's not really something that you can bring out of people and ask. You know, when I finally got in contact with Tom and we started talking and he told me over the phone, he told me a little bit about what happened to Laura after the band fell through. When I started to realize, holy crap, like what Kevin was talking to me about is right. And so we had like a huge powwow. I flew out to Oklahoma to go film that interview, which was really fun and really cool for me because, you know, on my mom's side of the family, you know, they all came from Oklahoma. I got a lot of family members from Oklahoma. So it was really cool to, oh, there you go. It was cool.
I don't have
I
any
actually,
family in Oklahoma, but it
I actually
cool.
was, I was staying like 25 minutes from where my mom lived when she was going to high school. And so that I got to go visit that house and it was really cool. And yeah, you know, me and Kevin had like a big powwow where we were talking about, you know, like this is how you know, he was like, this is really important because if you can nail this interview, then we've got a documentary. If you don't, then this is just going to be a really long video on the Defunctland channel. And it was the most nervous that I was before an interview. I was more nervous for that interview even than interviewing Gary Kreisel, who literally like has his hands in so much of, you know, huge Disney things, and Mike Post, who's a TV composing legend. And I was the most nervous to do this interview. And the interview ended up being 4.5 hours long. It was our longest interview that we did. And it was just shocking to me. And I remember calling Kevin afterwards and going like, we've 100%, we have a feature on our hands. At that point, we had the concert footage. And now with Tom and Laura's story being there, you know, I was like, this is no longer just going to be a fun little, oh, look at this cute, funny thing that no one knew about. This is going to be like that and so much more, you know? And I think what's great is, you know, I really wanted to make, my goal for the documentary was, I wanted you as an audience member to watch and at the very beginning, you know, kind of laugh at it and at the end be crying for it because mm-hmm. of how tragic the story was. But then also like, I wanted there to be an evolution, you know, because, you know, as a fan of Star Wars, I love, my favorite thing about Star Wars is that you can have, you know, at one moment, you know, all these scary things happening, you know, the Emperor shocking Luke, killing Luke in front of his father and his father having to make this decision. And then you can have Porks.
Yeah.
I love that you can have both of that. And so for me, I wanted it to feel like there is this evolution of you watching and going, oh, well, this is a cute, quirky thing. And then by the end going, well, I love this band now. And now it sucks that they no longer exist.
Yeah, that's a great thing in both your documentaries is you think it's going to be about one thing and it starts off that way. And then it ends up like, oh, it's really about this. Like, oh, it's really about a friendship. It's really about this woman and her struggles and the relationships within the band.
I think as a filmmaker, if you handle that properly, there is nothing more fun than being pleasantly surprised. You know, I don't think anyone likes to be pleasantly disappointed. Yeah. You know, I think people like to be pleasantly surprised.
I'm sure we could bring up other Star Wars properties if you want to be
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're referring to. But
I was going to say, I have a very specific memory I just keep thinking of when Rise of Skywalker was coming out of Matt texting me saying, like, he's going to get yeeted. It's going to be okay. It just keeps running through my head, but that's a different conversation.
That's a whole different conversation. But if you want to bring it back to talk about the new trilogy, great. Let's do it. Let's go down that road. But yeah, like
a different life ago.
It's really fun. I feel like as an audience member to, you know, like I was saying, you know, like be pleasantly surprised with stuff and not just be, oh, well, this is what I was expecting and I got out of it what I was expecting. It's nice when there are surprises that are, you know, fun for an audience member and rewarding and, you know, make you see life in a different way. And I think what's surprising to me is how the big response that we've gotten out of the film is people going, you know, you look at all these silly shows at theme parks and stuff and never once think about the performers at these shows and how these shows could possibly affect them. And something like Helix would have been huge. And it's so sad to think that, you know, Laura was going to be like the next Annette Funicello. She was going to be a Miley Cyrus 30 years before there was a Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana. And I can't even imagine. I don't think any of us could imagine how that felt to get ripped away from her.
Yeah. And it was such a short period. Like you said, it was only for a summer and it sounds like there was so much work and effort and like, they legitimately could have gone on and been a huge band and she was definitely the star. And that's a lot of people talk about that in the documentary. So yeah, it was really sad, but it's disappointing that, and that's real life though, that like sometimes the really talented people don't always make it.
Sometimes the really talented people have a lot, the most going on too. Like, you know, you have one thing and you're holding on 100% on that one thing. And if that thing gets teared away from you, like, those kind of things are like really hard to watch, but it happens all the time. And I will say, as much as I do think all the members in that band are amazing and compelling and like fun to watch, like Laura's story is like the heart and like the thing that really, I think, like compels you to love them and like want to know more. And it's very cool that it is like a Star Wars inspired thing that is like kind of surrounding like this awesome lady. I am like, very much just like, yeah, see, like Disney could figure it out then. It was good. I love it.
Yeah, because it wasn't like they were going, you know, into it like, oh, well, we'll audition people and, you know, the best singer happened to be a girl. No, they were like, this is going to be a Joan Jett Star Wars Kiss rock band. Mm-hmm. They went into it with the mindset of this is going to be female led, which is really cool, especially for back then.
Yeah, I was even thinking about like, when they were saying, I forget how many people auditioned, but I thought, okay, all those people who didn't even make it to get this job at Disney, like it just made me think of their stories. And you think of every entertainer who works at Disneyland, they're incredibly talented, but like you've probably never heard of them unless you're a big Disney nerd. And even
yeah,
then,
unless
not.
You're those people like us who are like, you know, oh, I saw them perform
losers.
That one time. Like, let me find out. But look, I mean, we can joke about it, but like you did say earlier, I do honestly believe that it is a lot more work and there's a lot of production and other things that go into it that, you know, if people are just coming through like the normal person on, you know, their one vacation, they get to go to Disney in their lifetime. Of course, they're not going to notice those things, but it doesn't mean that all those people aren't putting in like a crazy amount of effort and talent and to pull those things off. So like, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'll be the one person to point out that that's great. I don't feel any sort of way about it. I'm just like, that's great. And I love it.
And another thing, no offense to, you know, other Disney shows and other theme park shows, but something that a lot of people have been talking about is like Helix was actually really, really awesome. They were super kick-ass. Everyone in that band was extremely talented. Mm-hmm. And Laura was insanely talented. She's such a naturally good performer. And the fact that you can have, it's really impressive that you can have all of this light and pyrotechnics and a giant Wookiee behind you and a drum riser, and that all eyes are just focused in on her because of how good of a performer she is. That's really impressive.
Just star power.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No pun intended. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we would definitely compel everyone to go check that out and see the star power, fall in love with Laura, mm-hmm. everybody else. It is on the Defunct Land YouTube, right? Is that like just indefinitely where it's going to live? We're going to put that obviously in the
anyone can watch it
down below. And I mean, I'll probably just be posting about it. Continual Laura looks will probably just
I feel like people at a church that give out like the free Bibles because they want you to know more about Jesus. I'm like, you know, here's a free copy of Halix. Have you heard of Halix?
Have you heard the good word? Spare about Halix today?
Have you heard the jailbait? So shall we move on to Disney at the or Star Wars at the Disney parks?
I mean, we can try. Yes, please. We can try. It's a hard act to follow.
Okay, so let's start with Captain EO. So this is we're going to talk about Star Wars or Star Wars inspired things or Lucas related things that have been at Disneyland specifically. Some of these actually are Orlando, but mostly Disneyland.
Do get all the fun things.
They do.
But besides Halix.
Yeah, we got Halix.
Besides Halix.
I remember Captain EO being around. I remember watching it before they had Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And I loved it. And I love the little fuzzy ball guy.
Fuzzball. Literally Fuzzball.
I literally have Fuzzball and Hooter. I have
you do? Plush.
I will unabashedly say I love Captain America. Captain America.
You also love Captain America.
Freudian slip.
Ooh, yikes. Captain EO as well. I love captains. Captain Marvel also. Any other captains? No? Okay. I made her snort. I will say, though, I grew up being obsessed with Michael Jackson in, like, sixth grade. Around fifth or sixth grade was when one of those new Michael Jackson albums came out. We would borrow the CD player from our teacher and listen to Michael Jackson on our, like, breaks and lunch. So I, like, just love Michael Jackson. I loved Captain EO. And I have dressed up as Captain EO for Halloween in the past with my fuzzball on my shoulder. So, yes, I do have very strong feelings about it.
It's just lukewarm.
And Captain America.
And to rewind a bit, you know, for anyone who's familiar with Captain EO and is still kind of like unsure about Halix, you can't be a fan of Captain EO and not be a fan of Halix because they are the same thing. Mm-hmm. It is a ragtag team of humans, robots, and aliens playing the popular music of the of the 80s underneath Space Mountain. It's the exact same thing, except one is Lucas inspired and one is Lucas produced. Real quick to throw a fun personal Captain EO story. I didn't go to Disneyland for like 7 or 8 years. It was like a while where I didn't go. It was during the recession. My family was like, we're not going to spend money on Disneyland tickets. So we didn't go for a while. And so in, I want to say 2014, it was like in the last 2 years of the Captain EO tribute still being there. We got our passes back, and the first day we were back, we were like, well, let's go see this thing. And I had no idea what it was. My mom and dad were like, oh yeah, I remember Captain EO. Let's go see this. And so we go in and we were watching it. And there's that part near the end of the film when there's the guys with the whips that come out and they're attacking EO. And then EO shoots like the laser light at the pole.
He sure does.
And there's that one dancer. I think there's like a black dancer and a white dancer. I think the black dancer comes out first and he does like some pop and lock moves. Mm-hmm. And then he shoots it at another barrier thing. And this white guy dancer, pops out. He's got this crazy hair tuft thing. And my dad goes, oh yeah, I know that guy. And me and my little sister just like silently turned to him in the theater and were like staring at him. What are you talking about? Well, the conversation following was really interesting. Apparently, my dad immigrated here from El Salvador when he was 16. And he came to Orange County and he's a really good natural dancer. He's a good natural athlete. So he became friends with a lot of dancers in the Orange County clubs or in the LA scene, the OC scene. And he actually became friends with people who later on became like close-knit dancers with Michael Jackson and were dancers with all this stuff. And my dad auditioned and almost was in the Bad music video, because for the Bad music video, they were like, okay, we don't want any white guys. We're looking for the Puerto Ricans. We're looking for the black guys, you know? And so my dad almost was in that music video. And because of that, he knew, you know, a couple of the Michael Jackson dancers. So I guess he knew that Captain EO guy.
That is amazing.
So cool.
I also do love that they were strict about the representation. Like, mm-hmm. Hello, this isn't for you.
Like, yeah, right.
You're one step closer to Michael Jackson now.
I mean, it's not the best representation because it's supposed to be gang members, but you know. Yeah,
oh, that's true. So.
Because it's the Bad music video.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah.
You went some of you some, but yeah.
You know, anytime you're in a music video, is a good time.
Allison, anytime you're in a music video, is a good time. Put that on a bumper sticker.
You can quote that for me.
Stop that.
You know I'm bad. And making jokes about that.
I just want to watch this go on for the next 10 minutes. So you also mentioned Lucasport, and I had never heard about that, so I'm curious as to what that is.
Yeah, so, you know, falling in line with Captain EO, there was a time when Disney was looking at their Tomorrowland, and they were like, okay, we have no idea what to do here. At the time, you have to remember, this is, you know, a lot of people like to look at our Tomorrowland now and go, oh, you know, I wish we had the Tomorrowland back then, and it's like, no, dude, you didn't, because the Tomorrowland back then was like lame science exhibits and
aluminum. Yeah.
And, yeah. The wonders of plastic. And,
whoever sponsors this exhibit for this year.
Yeah. And like their big showcase thing in the '70s was not even future involved at all. It was America Sings, mm-hmm. in the old Carousel of Progress exhibit, which was about old American songs and folklore. You know, it had nothing to do with the future at all. And then their star attraction was Space Mountain, and then, you know, Adventures Through Inner Space. And so, you know, they were starting to, and you know, Helix is what's important, what's so important about Helix is you can kind of see that was the first thing that's like, look, you know, appealing to teens is important. We got to appeal to more of the teens. If we can get the teens, you know, that's going to really help us out. And so they were looking at Tomorrowland as an obvious one, because they're like, okay, back then you couldn't even say science fiction or science fantasy. No one knew what you were talking about. People just went, oh, that's like Star Wars. They would see anything and they would go, oh, that's like Star Wars. This is like Star Wars. So they're looking at Tomorrowland going, okay, well, this sucks and is lame. We need to make this look like Star Wars. So they were trying and trying and trying for years, apparently, to get George Lucas's involvement with Tomorrowland, or just Disneyland in general. And I think George was really waiting for that one right thing. But in the meantime, they developed a whole pitch for him. They were like, look, we're going to spend all this money and we're going to fully redo Tomorrowland and we're going to make it Lucasport. And it was basically the first Galaxy's Edge, essentially, which is really interesting. You know, when I talked to Gary Kreisel about it, because I asked him about it and he actually brought that up as well as Captain EO and whatnot. And he told me, yeah, it's really interesting. A lot of the things that, you know, later on went to be, you know, purchased by Disney were things that we were trying to pitch. We were saying, you know, let's get Star Wars into the parks. We should be producing Star Wars movies. We should buy Marvel Comics. That was something that they were throwing out there then. They were like, we should have Captain America,
and
Spider-Man in our parks, even back then. And so, yeah, Lucasport, if you have the time, there are a couple articles about it online. I believe Park Lord did a really great article about them. I could be wrong, but the concept art is amazing. It's so cool because, you know, you think of something like Galaxy's Edge, and Galaxy's Edge, you know, is very much like, you know, let's make it look like you fell into a real village on a real planet somewhere in the galaxy, in the Star Wars universe. Whereas Lucasport was like, look, man, let's just go crazy. Let's just make everything look like Cloud City. It basically, all of it looks like Bespin Cloud City, and none of it has any rhyme or reason. They're like, yeah, sure. stormtroopers here and glass buildings there. It's awesome.
I just have to say Cloud City is like literally at the top of my dream.
I looked at you.
Tomorrowland. my overhaul in my mind. Yeah.
You have to look at this concept art. You have to.
It's just it's so easy. It's like minimal. It's white, basically. I mean, this is my just plain Cloud City outfit. Aesthetics.
I love it. It's
aesthetics
great.
In this Instagram 2020 society.
I'm going to have to do a whole episode on my podcast about Lucasport now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's lots to talk about there. It's awesome.
So next star tour. So these are kind of in chronological order because everyone knows I'm very OCD about that. So originally was going to be based off of a Disney Star Wars ripoff called The Black Hole, which did not do well.
Their other Star Wars ripoff that they were working on around the same time. Yes.
And then the first attraction not based on a Disney IP in the park.
Star Tours was really interesting because, yeah, I have read up about that stuff too. My favorite thing, I love doing deep dives on movies that were going to be huge attractions and then never did. And I read
Indiana
about
Jones.
The Black Hole.
Indiana
you mean
Jones
the Dick
world.
Tracy thing?
Oh, the Dick Tracy world too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Bring me onto a podcast to talk about Dick Tracy, please. I am obsessed with that piece of shit movie. Sorry. And that ride would have been amazing.
I love that movie. I actually have a lot of this is my weird Disney obsession, is there's a designer in the 80s named Wendy Gill who did a bunch of amazing, gaudy, like 80s-y, like designer style jewelry. And one of the few collections she did was Dick Tracy. So I have like
this
whole pile of like Dick Tracy. Like I have a couple different
you have
like,
to send me photos
pins.
Of that.
I've always wanted to do Breathless stuff, but I feel like people don't really aren't into Dick Tracy. So I'm like, I'll just
Madonna fans will love it.
All those Madonna fans.
Oh,
yeah,
there's
all those Madonna fans. But yeah, I own like a Blu-ray copy of Dick Tracy. I was like, I need to watch this movie in the highest quality that I can. My quick thing about Dick Tracy, and then we'll get back into it, is that back to Star Wars and stuff, but like, I love the fact that Michael Eisner told, what was the name of the guy who is in Dick Tracy and he's the director?
Warren Beatty?
Warren Beatty.
Mr. Yeah. Warren Beatty?
Mr. La La Land. That guy.
That just makes me want to go Gladiator.
I know this is not, it's also taking me right off, but I'm going to say, you know, Carrie Fisher got into movies because of Warren Beatty. So it is still bringing it back to Star Wars because her first movie was Shampoo, where she played his young lover. Anyways, back to Warren Beatty.
My favorite thing is apparently the original cut of Dick Tracy was like 3 hours long or 4 hours long. And
Mike
Eisner was like, hey, Warren, we can't release this. No one's going to watch this. You have to make this 90 minutes. And then Warren Beatty just went, okay, cool. So what does that mean? Take out scenes? No, we're going to cut every scene in half. And so there are so many, as an editor, there are so many parts that I just die laughing at where I'm just like, that is the worst editing decision you could have made. There's one part where this is the one last thing I'll say, and then I'm probably going to get back to it. I'm so sorry. But there's one part where Dick Tracy walks into a warehouse, sees that there's like the mayor or somebody is getting cement poured over him. He tricks the two mob bosses to go walk one way. Dick Tracy runs over, helps the guy, breaks the box, frees the guy. The two thugs turn around. The guy Dick Tracy has just rescued is nowhere to be seen, never is seen ever again in the movie, and Dick Tracy is covered head to toe in cement when he was dry in the previous shot.
Oh,
nice.
Do they have a director's cut of Dick Tracy?
If there is, I would love to see it, because there are things in the movie where like someone will start talking and halfway through he gets cut off because they're just like, next scene.
Not every decision Michael Eisner makes is great.
It is so Eisner, though, I feel like, to an extent of like, we spent all the money and now I don't want to spend any more money.
Yes.
So just like...
But to Eisner's credit, he when he came into the company, he heard what people like Gary Kreisel and everyone was saying. And he was like, I agree.
Oh, we're two Eisner apologists, Jasmine and I. We're team Eisner, actually.
I am team Eisner as well. You
know,
he
brought the creativity. He took chances.
Oh, yeah.
He said, hey, son, what do you want?
Was he was not pre-Helix.
He said, hey, Breck.
Hey, Breck, baby.
Breck Eisner.
So we should, you should clarify, because I think you're, if you're asking what I think you're asking, yes. So Michael Eisner got brought in, I want to say in 1984 to the company. And so he was the one that said, you know, there's a great part where Tony Baxter was interviewed on podcast The Ride, and he talks about his experience with meeting Michael Eisner, where he goes, you know, hey, Michael, I've got these rides I want to pitch to you. And then Michael goes, I brought my son Breck along with me, and he's going to tell me if the rides are cool or lame. And, you know, Tony pitched him the ride pitch for Star Tours. And Breck was like, oh my God, that's so cool. You got to do that. And then he was like, all right, that's great. We're making Star Tours. What else you got? And he goes, well, I have this idea for a ride, Splash Mountain. He's like, oh, Dad, that's so cool. You got to build that too. Okay, we're building both of those. We'll build Star Tours next year, and then we'll build Splash Mountain the year after that. And then the people at Imagineering and the money people were telling him, no, actually, that's not how it works. You know, these rides take time. You got to develop them and then build them and all that stuff. And then he goes, well, okay.
That's not what Breck said.
You know what? Get Francis Ford Coppola, George Lucas, and Michael Jackson on the phone, because you can't tell me I can't make a movie in a year. And so that's how we got Captain EO. So fast forwarding now to, you know, now we have Star Tours, which...
Thanks, Breck.
Yeah. I think if I'm
sorry
if I'm
about
mistaken,
Splash Mountain, though, Breck.
Yeah, sorry.
Had
sorry,
to Breck. Do it to you.
Yeah, I wonder how Breck feels about Splash Mountain being gone.
He's very...
Breck's
very
never
about
cared
it.
About anything.
Yeah. He's literally- I think, honestly, I think Breck's fine, because I don't think Breck was like, oh, yeah, Song of the South, my favorite movie. Yeah. He was probably like, wow, you get to go down a big fall? That's so cool.
He was,
you
know? Like, I thought I was going to see a topless Daryl Hannah. Like, no, what are you talking about?
Breck just hates Disney. Like, Breck
I would
doesn't
love
care about anything.
To meet Breck Eisner, and he's like, I don't remember any of this.
Right?
Like, you influenced the theme park world more than anybody in modern history. do we Breck. Have any thoughts about final thoughts about Star Tours?
Yeah,
I love it. But I'll see. I always feel really torn because I have this like obsession with Tomorrowland and how like it does not function and is like ugly and it's like so like the epitome of our dark future because it's just like broken and sad and depressing.
The darkest
but
timeline.
I do think that if you would take Star Tours away at this point, I would still really miss it and be sad because I have that sentimentality for like that 80s Tomorrowland, you know. But I do feel at least like now they kind of have some updates like they had for so long originally planned. So it's like I have a fondness for it. If it had to go for my Cloud City Tomorrowland
no,
of my dreams.
Batu.
I'll still let it go.
You move, and then when you get off Star Tours, then you're in Batu. That would be really cool.
The tour could take you
yes.
to the place.
The place that you're seeing.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was hoping, so we're supposed to go, Allison and I, to Star Wars night, and I was really hoping that they would bring back the original Star Tours just for then, so I'm really I'm hoping that happens.
Yeah, I really hope that happens someday too, because for me, Star Tours, when it existed, was, and maybe in a way still is, my favorite attraction of all time, because in my opinion, I do believe that that's the best Disney Star Wars we're ever going to get, because yeah. It really, like... I remember as a kid, like every time I would ride that ride, the best part of that ride is when the music comes in, the blah, and mm-hmm. the X-Wings fly right in front of you and they go, red 24, red 30, follow me. And Rex goes, okay, I've always wanted to do this. We're going in. And like the sheer, just like, just all the hairs on my arm just standing up and all of the butterflies in my stomach, you know, it's just, that is incredible. And no offense to anyone who loves Galaxy's Edge. It's great.
It's
but
fine.
Nothing comes
it's
close
fine.
To that.
Comets?
Nothing comes close to that. There is no, I've always wanted to do this, we're going in any of Galaxy's Edge stuff. And mm-hmm. it's really unfortunate because, yeah, just like Tony Baxter nailed that. He absolutely nailed that. And like, as a kid standing there about to go onto the ride, and they did that ingenious thing of having the security camera footage above mm-hmm. you while you're waiting. That looks so real. It looks so bad that you buy into it being real. And hearing the sounds of the ride behind the door, but seeing that security footage tricked my kid brain into thinking, oh my God, there's a real spaceship back there. and just so all these things that are just not there in the new Star Tours. Someone forgot to pack their Wookiee cookies. I'm like, okay, whatever. This sucks. Okay. This is lame. I will say, though, I'm a huge fan of the Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker, Force Awakens updates. I think those are awesome. And I think Rian Johnson even talked about, he was like, yeah, we were inspired by, you know, as I was a fan of, he was a fan of the original Star Tours. That whole sequence on Crait when they're flying in the Crystal Caverns, he said that was directly inspired by when you go through the comet in the original Star Tours.
Comets.
And so, you know, it's poetic in a way that it came back to Star Tours. And so, you know, I got to commend him for that. And I don't know. Like, I heard a lot of people say a lot of different things about Star Tours. But in my opinion, you know, you're never going to top the original Star Tours. I mean, I would love to be proven wrong. Please prove me wrong, Disney.
So the original Star Tours was like you were role-playing as characters and scenes that you love, and then Galaxy's Edge is like, oh, here's something we made up, which is cool, but like, I don't want to pretend to be this person. I don't know who this person is, or like, I only heard this character 2 years ago.
They didn't like stand behind the characters and think that they invented, like, what's her name? Zai V. I never say it correctly, whichever I say.
I think it's Vi Moradi. I think it's Vi Moradi, because in my brain I feel like I remembered it because it rhymed, but I could be wrong.
All I know is there's a lot of things there as far as like them not standing behind those type of characters they're creating, especially when they are like characters of diversity, where you're kind of going like, you don't get to claim having diverse characters, but then they don't exist. People don't know who she is when she's one of the only characters running around in the area. Like, as much as I do enjoy, like, Galaxy's Edge just as a place, because it's nice to see any sort of physical manifestation of Star Wars, I do realize that I only love it because it's Star Wars. It's still not, like, the best Star Wars. I don't really get that feeling, like Matt said, of going, like, oh, like, I'm in it. Like, I don't think I've ever been in Batuu and been, like, I'm in Star Wars, you know?
Yeah, going back to talking about Helix for a second and making of the documentary, you know, whenever I make documentaries, whether it's about Helix or it's about, you know, Remain Seated Please and about Horizons, the last thing that I'm trying to do is make the movie appealing to people who already are fans of those things. In fact, I remember telling Hoot, from Remain Seated Please, I said, the last person that I want to like the movie is you. I am trying to make a movie for some person, some 90-year-old woman out in the middle of Illinois who has never even heard of a theme park before. I am making that movie for her because I want her to be blown away by the movie that I'm making, because I don't want there to be any strings attached to anything. A friend of mine once kind of described, you know, like, he was like, I always try to make sure that the art that I make passes the mom and dad test or the uncle test. You know, if you show your mom or dad something and they go, I don't get it, then probably it's not the best that it could be. And I've actually heard from a lot of people's moms and dads and uncles, they go to, including my own mom and dad, they go to Galaxy's Edge and they just go, what was the point of that? There's nothing to do. Just they're like, it doesn't look like Star Wars to me. There's nothing to do. There's nothing going on. Why do they make it? And it, you know what? That's valid. That's totally valid, because like you were saying, you know, I mean, the only thing that I get a kick out of with Galaxy's Edge is because I already am a Star Wars fan.
And we're all just taking it for what it is. I feel like even those of us who like say we like it, like we're like,
I like it because it could have been worse. Like
that's what I said about Rise of Skywalker. Yep. It could have been worse.
Remember how excited we were, guys, in 2015? We were like, oh man, Force Awakens, this is going to be fun.
I remember how excited everyone was in 1999 for the prequels. And then it was like,
I love the prequels. I love prequels. Don't you ever speak about hating Christians.
I've now come full circle to have a big appreciation for the prequels now. I got to say, because I remember that was a big thing with me and all my friends in high school. You know, like, didn't matter if you were a guy or a girl, we all were like, Yep, those Plinkett reviews. You know, that was what we would reference all the time. That was like all of our inside jokes were from the Plinkett
thing
reviews.
With the prequels, though, right? Is like it's like saying like, did they make like the fan fiction like we would all like pick to be the, you know, expansion of the Star Wars universe? Like, no, probably not. But like, they stuck with the story. It pretty much makes sense from the beginning to the end. It's not like every director changes and then they throw away half the movie from before. Like, they, it's,
it was on tour. It was on tour. Yeah.
It was on tour. Exactly. Sense. Yeah.
You know.
At the very least, it was on tour.
Hayden Christensen was there, so it's a 10 out of 10 for me.
Something that was not on tour.
Padme's close.
Was Star Wars Weekends.
Speaking of wild.
Yes, let's go.
So occurred at Hollywood Studios on weekends in May and June, and it began in 1997 and lasted until 2015. It wasn't annual. I forget the year it became annual. So events included Star Wars, fireworks, a parade featuring the 501st, and stars from the film. So I think everyone except Harrison Ford had gone. Like Carrie Fisher was there, Mark Hamill.
They didn't have
Billy
the money.
D. Williams.
One of my favorite panels I remember watching on YouTube was Frank Oz, because I never had the pleasure of ever attending one of those Star Wars weekends. But I would watch all of those panels for hours and hours and hours from home. And yeah, the Frank Oz one is a really great one.
I love Frank. I also am a big Miss Piggy fan, so I have a Miss Piggy.
I'm a big Miss
there.
Piggy fan. I finally got around to watching Little Shop of Horrors. Me and my girlfriend are now huge Little Shop of Horror fans. Now we listen to the music all the time. So,
which,
and also
remaking.
Muppets Take Manhattan's the best Muppet movie. You can fight me on
so
that.
Good.
The best one, hands down, and that's also Frank Oz directed.
I love Caper, but I think that's just because I'm like, I like Caper because everyone hates it, so I don't know if I really...
Caper's so fun. Yeah, I like Caper too. I really do like
Miss
Caper.
Piggy. So one of the events that they have, it's called Snig and Oopla's Hyperspace Hoopla. It is a live dance show where Star Wars characters have a dance-off. Some of the scenes I saw were was the Emperor dancing to LL Cool J, and then the Darth Vader and Padme doing a sexy dance to Adele.
Basically, if you've been on the internet since 2010 and you've seen a GIF of a Star Wars character dancing like crazy, it's from the Star Wars Hoopla. 99% probably from that show.
You didn't dream it up. It was real.
I'm pretty sure, isn't it Darth Maul who does Gangnam Style into Too Legit to Quit? That's one of my favorites, obviously.
It was basically Disney trying to be like, well, Star Wars, or, you know, Helix was a thing, and we have a Wookiee playing bass, you know, let's have a Wookiee doing Gangnam Style. You know, that's totally the same thing, right?
It is.
What I did love about Hoopla videos, because, like, I never could go either. That's just, like, before I admitted I even liked Star Wars that much. I was like, I'm just a casual Star Wars person. Like, I don't even know their names. Or, like,
Star
what
Wars?
The, yeah, like, they're all just the Star Wars 1, 2, and 3. Like, I did love Hayden Christensen. I did claim that. But beyond that, you know.
The Hoopla thing was, it's really funny because it kind of does fall in line with a little bit of like what we were talking about before with Matt Tea Party, where, you know, a lot of people on the outside look at it and you go on the YouTube comments, it's all like, cringe, this and that, cringe, 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 cringe. But then you're watching the video and the audience there is
crazy,
losing their minds.
Yeah.
Absolutely 100% losing their minds, loving it. It's the best thing ever.
Well, yeah, I remember all I had when I was a kid was Princess Leia, because like, she was an action star, but she wasn't necessarily like super athletic. She was more like of a mental hero, and she was a great leader.
Right.
And I was like, that's someone who I could be like, because I'm like, I'm not going to be like Lara Croft. I'm going to be like Princess Leia.
I'm glad that you point out the mental hero thing, because that's something that I thought was so wonderful about Leia and really broke my heart in the last two movies when they just threw that out the window. Mm-hmm. Was that that's what made her special, was that, you know, Han was the brawn and the, you know, and the experience, if you will. And then Luke was kind of the soul. Mm-hmm. And he was off on his journey and he was, you know, falling his way through to figuring out how to use these cosmic powers of his. Whereas Leia was just sheer will. Mm-hmm. and just a fighting spirit, because here is someone that right when you meet her, she watches as her entire planet and everyone she's ever known is just snapped out of existence, not like Thanos, you know, just mm-hmm. just like that, just gone in front of her eyes. And the fact that she the whole time isn't spending it crying, going, oh, poor me. The whole time she's thinking, I got to get back to that base so I can leave this rebellion.
There's something greater than me and like in that split second of like, do I just tell or do I save the entire universe? And
it's, oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm really glad that you pointed that out about Leia, because I'm glad I'm not the only one that appreciates
no,
that.
No, what they did to her is actually like very soul crushing. Mm-hmm. Even
they're
in
like,
the Disney
they're
canon.
Like, she's cool because she's a Jedi, like your brother. That's why she's cool.
No,
like,
she was actually always cool. She was cooler than any of the guys already.
Yeah.
And she was like the person who had to actually like, on the outside maintain being cool, mm-hmm. because like half the time, you know, like she was a princess or she was like, and you know, like couldn't just let it all hang out and like cry like Luke about it or something. But actually Disney still has like put out new canon books and things about like Leia's, like about when she's 16, Leia of Alderaan. It actually makes like what's happened to Leia even more upsetting, because you really think about the fact that not only was she like adopted, she really loved her parents. And there's like a lot of stuff with the Organas, like you never got to hear. So knowing like what happens to them and that like she finds out about the rebellion and like from a very young age is like, I'm going to do like everything I can do, even though like she obviously makes a lot of mistakes, as we all do. To see like what happens to her, you're just like, she's your best character. Like you could debate about it, yeah. But to me, like Leia is definitely the greatest character, and like especially for like women in general. Mm-hmm. And you go like, that's what you did. That's what you thought was great.
And we should also point out really quickly too, how great Carrie Fisher was.
Oh, Carrie Fisher. I've read all of her books. She's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I love Carrie Fisher.
That was one of the best things
I think
about.
She's better than bread.
She is
better
than
bread. I'm not even that in the
car. And I love bread. She's better than bread.
I mean, I think Carrie was without a doubt, like, besides being so, like, personable and putting, like, her own struggles and life out there for people, it's, like, especially as a woman and, like, this type of feminist where, like, it's not to be anything. It's just like literally being yourself, and like through the power of just like showing people who you are, it like allows them to like be who they are, which mm-hmm. is like really, really so brave. Like it's so incredibly huge. I could like talk about her forever, so we are gonna have to stop. But
yes,
if you haven't read
her
books, you
can
have
can
to.
I share really quickly one of my favorite Carrie Fisher quotes ever?
Yes,
yes.
So you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, Disney Star Wars, you know, and like how things are different now, and you know, something a lot of people talk about is how, you know, manufactured a lot of that behind the scenes stuff is, especially for the new Star Wars movies, of like, everyone loves Star Wars. It's all about family, and the production went great. And you know, you look at the prequels, and George Lucas is scratching his head, going, "I may have gone too far in a few places." And you don't really see a lot of moments like that. But my favorite thing is, I love that when they're interviewing her for The Last Jedi, and everyone has all these fluff quotes about the making of all these movies, and they go, "How was it working with Rian Johnson? He's an asshole. I know a lot of people will tell you he's nice. He's really not." And then that's just it. That's the end of the quote.
I just love her. Speaking of Princess Leia, what about characters in Disney that you can meet? Who's your favorite? Who do you want to see? Who do we not see represented?
I want to see Princess Leia. That is, yeah. She's not currently an option. I always get very flustered when I'm around Kylo Ren, and then I have to remind myself there's probably like an 18-year-old in there. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I would love to be able to meet Anakin. I'm just saying, Poe Dameron.
You used to be able to. I don't know if you've seen the I'm sure you've probably seen the videos.
Oh, I've seen the videos.
Oh, I'm sure you have. Yeah. I was about to say, I don't know if you know. Wait, no, I know you know.
Me? Videos? I'll also take videos if people like one.
I think an Ahsoka Tano meetup would be really impressive, especially if they were able to really nail the makeup and costume for that. I would also just love to see the Mandalorian characters. I think that would be really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely, and be able to see Baby Yoda would be really, really cool.
Oh, that
yeah,
would
I
be
don't
a
know.
One.
Can't really think of any where I feel like there's a lack of.
I do think in general, I just feel like I wish there was another female character, mm-hmm. like besides like Rey, who they know at least from the movies, because mm-hmm. I do feel like there's not as much equal representation with seeing like the female characters, the female presenting characters for like younger people. But you know, hopefully that will expand something. We're going to have new things coming out. Will we ever see characters in Disney again? Who I don't even know. 2020 is a crazy time.
One day we will all meet again, and I'll hug Chewbacca.
Chewbacca gives great hugs. That's a he great does. Character meet and greet.
Oh, yeah. It's impressive that they keep up that costume with how many times he gets hugged every day. That's honestly really, really impressive.
Some high quality fur.
Because I know they talk in the making of Force Awakens, I remember they talked about how they were having to tell crew members, you got to stop hugging Chewie because it's costing us thousands and thousands of dollars to restitch the fabric perfectly. So it's impressive that they nailed it for Galaxy's Edge.
It really is like more than a lot of the other costumes. It's like, oh, Chewbacca stepped out of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right here. Like even more, yeah, than like Kylo Ren. It's like, oh, no, this is Chewbacca. Hello, Chewie.
Yeah, Kylo Ren looks like a little like, because Adam is huge.
Yeah.
Adam Driver is huge, okay? And I feel like that kind of, Alice is going.
Me being a creep. I'm sorry. Yes. I love the women and men of Star Wars, okay? I appreciate them.
Do you have your pillow?
No, it's in the other room. I have a pillow that Jasmine gifted me, and it has a picture of Adam Driver, and it says Keanu Reeves.
And we laughed at it for an hour and a half.
And I don't know why it exists. It's a great gift that I feel like is just very great specifically for my interest in life.
Yeah. It was made for you.
And you know, depending on the day, there are some rays that are just, plucked out of the movie. You look exactly like Daisy Ridley. I'm sold. It's so crazy. And they're all so good at doing the impersonation, or not even impersonation, just acting and stuff.
Stepping into the shoes.
But Chewie is just like so consistently like, wow, I feel like I'm in Star Wars. It's so crazy. Really, really hope for more and more droids to get rolled out too, because the like having R2 out really helps too.
R2 is the star. Got to meet C-3PO at 80s night. Ooh. And I swear to God, the way I just stared at this robot was like, like I just have a video of like looking at him with my big old wig. Like, I love C-3PO. Also, I know some people hate C-3PO. Like,
I love C-3PO. I'm a C-3PO defender from way back.
He looks amazing in person. I know, like, he hasn't rolled out, like, for everybody. So seeing him was like, he's real.
Have you seen the Star Wars video where it's, like, when they open Star Tours and Michael Eisner can't remember the name C-3PO?
C-3PO.
Yeah.
C-3PO. Crushing it as always. I love
it. Hello, R2. And 3PCO.
So let's end this by talking about Galaxy's Edge, or maybe that's a sad thing to end on. Maybe we'll end with a Galactic Star Cruiser. But so Galaxy's Edge, I like it.
See, this is what I said earlier. It's fine.
It needs Halix.
It needs Halix. Cantina Band Halix.
It needs heart. It needs like something to do. Something to do. Besides purchasing items.
She looks great.
Yeah.
Although it's immersion, I don't know.
It still doesn't feel like Star Wars in the same way, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, like, going with a place that doesn't exist instead of, like, you know, I remember when they were first talking about doing these lands, you know, how, like, they were going to be different, and maybe one was going to be, like, Endor, and one could be Hoth or something. I'm like, there's literally so many planets in Star Wars we've already been introduced to give us this place and then to choose a specifically like not aesthetic, not cute place is like the least exciting, like bare minimum choice they still could have made. That I'm like gonna be bitter a little bit about it for a long time. I mean, Endor could have at least had trees. You could have like,
and it's like they hired Scott Trowbridge because he did Harry Potter. And the reason Harry Potter's so amazing is because it's literally like, I'm in the movie. This is exactly every detail's in the movie. So then it's like, okay, we're gonna take that away from you and you have to make this new world that nobody knows about, which is still cool, but like, isn't the whole point? It's like role playing. Like, you want to be in that world.
Well, even in books about Galaxy's Edge, like it's a kind of a town where like, or a, you know, area that's a port, and a lot of the people who are there don't want to be there. It's like a kind of a planet you just live because there's nothing else to do. There's wheat. There's like supposed to be like a bunch of fields of wheat. And like, it's not a great, you don't get excited to go there.
Batuu sucks and I love it.
Yeah, Batuu does suck and I love it. But
like you're talking about, like that heart, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of ways that you can implement that heart, or even just fun, just plain old fun. Cause at the end of the day, it's a theme park. Like literally the 2 days before I went on Rise of the Resistance for the first time, I was in Florida and I got to go on Spider-Man, The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, over at Universal Islands of Adventure for my first time. that's Scott Trowbridge's first ride. Scott Trowbridge did such an amazing job with Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He got hired over to do Harry Potter, and then that's when Disney plucked him for Galaxy's Edge. And we were so blown away by how fun that ride is. That ride mm-hmm. is a blast. That is top five best rides in existence.
I agree.
It is so fun. And then you go on Rise of the Resistance, and the intro cue part is incredible. Mm-hmm. The way that they did all of that with the briefing room and you loading onto the ship, getting into the hangar, all of that stuff leading into the ride is incredible. The ride is not fun. The ride
I'm glad
is,
we can admit that.
Is
here,
a
actually.
Billion. The ride is $1 billion Mr. Toad. You just move around and see very impressive things, and none of it is fun. You have a trackless ride system, and I feel like you know, like a good example of that is like, you know, you have the Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man and they're like, okay, we have this new technology where we can, you know, move you around on this vehicle that has never been in a theme park before and like do all this cool stuff with 3D screens. So let's throw everything we can at it. And like, they have that really fun part with Electro where Electro flies in and goes, mm-hmm. you're in for a shock. Plugs a cord and the whole ride vehicle starts shaking and vibrating like crazy and then you spin out. And I'm shocked that with the trackless ride system, they didn't have you do any spin outs or anything like that. I'm really surprised by that.
Almost any movement.
Or any movement at all. It's surprising to me. You know, I think that the part where you escape is absolutely incredible. There's
it's
no doubt
short,
about
though.
That.
To me, like, I'm like, I wish there was a little more.
It's short,
the only real.
It is incredible. But yeah, like to what you're saying and to what I was saying earlier, there's no, I've always wanted to do this. There's no mm-hmm. part in Smuggler's Run or in Rise of Resistance or even just in the land in general that really gives you goosebumps of, oh my God, like, you know, that feeling of why we all fell in love with these stories in the first place, you know?
And I will say, I actually did love, was it Smuggler's Run? Smuggler's but it's because I'm like a pretty good pilot. But I do think that ride's fun just because I'm like a competitive person. And I'm like, when you're someone who's a pass holder and you're able to go back, part of me is like, oh, let's see if it actually makes a difference to do this. And like,
which it
if
doesn't,
I could do
but
better.
Yeah. It's nice well, to imagine.
You know, I've learned like certain things about like, from people who have worked on things. So I'm like, maybe, like, I want to believe. But I still at least think that that is closer to the moment of like something from the, you know, world than like Rise, which I think is like, it's a feat. And like, I appreciate it. I enjoy it. It's not like to like poop all over the ride, but it just doesn't give you like any real like, oh my God, can you believe it? Like, yeah, it's cool. I like it. Everything in Batu is fine and nice. It's cool.
I really like Rise, but I will fully admit that my expectations have been lowered by a lot of things Disney has been putting out. So that the fact that I'm like, it's not all screens. You're actually seeing things.
Yeah.
Just was like, mm-hmm. what?
Even the screens they use, though, in the ride are really impressive. Mm-hmm. Really, really impressive.
When Rey says, welcome to the cause, it reminds me of when I was 10 years old and they re-released the original trilogy in theaters, and I remember leaving and hearing the theme music of Star Wars play. It brought back that feeling again.
Yeah, I had like kind of some ideas on how I would like reshape the ride. I feel like the problem with the ride is there's no there needs to be like kind of a ticking time bomb aspect to things. There needs to feel like there's a suspense element, like a chase. And so my idea was, how cool would it be because of how the line works if, you know, when you load into that first hologram room, you walk in and that briefing is beginning and you're getting this thing of, oh yeah, you guys are going to be brought into, you know, we're going to have you meet General Leia. We're going to go to, and then all of a sudden all these alarms start blaring and it's like you're in, it's like Empire Strikes Back. Imperials have entered the base. Imperials have entered the base. And all these alarms are going off and those screens that you see where you see, oh, we just walked through those hallways. Can you imagine if you remember just walking through those hallways and all of a sudden you see screens of stormtroopers sprinting down the same hallways and you're thinking, oh my God, they're going to be coming any second now. So then you add that sort of level of energy and excitement to it. And then finally on the ride, I really feel like they needed to take all of the scenes and completely reorganize them. You need to have Kylo Ren and Snoke. In that, or in mm-hmm. not Snoke, and Hux, in that first scene. you need to be sneaking around and then go, wait, don't go into that room. And you go into the wrong room and oh no, there's Kylo Ren and Hux right there. Like, could not have screwed up more.
Oh no, how did I get here?
And so that way for the rest of the ride, you're waiting for him to come back. And you add that level of suspense of, oh my God, when is Kylo going to catch us? Is Kylo going to catch us? Because the ride now is just kind of like, oh, I see Kylo. Oh, I see him again. And then you see him again for the ending. And this is kind of like, oh, okay, whatever. But, you know, the way I heard the ride being pitched was like, you are being hunted down by Kylo Ren. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like you don't get that feeling. You kind of just encounter him twice.
It does rely a lot on spectacle too. Like, oh, you like AT-ATs? Look at this AT-AT right here. Like, oh, like you like stormtroopers? Look at these stormtroopers. So I do see your point of like, oh, I guess there's not a lot as much story. Like, what is the point of the AT-ATs being there except that it's just
cool? An AT-AT. Yeah.
I love those. What are they doing inside a ship? Like,
also another thing too is, early Disney Lucasfilm partnership really nailed the music when it came mm-hmm. to Star Tours and Indiana Jones. And I do commend them for writing the original score for Smuggler's Run and Rise of Resistance. But like, man, can you imagine like chasing down the hallways of the Star Destroyer and hearing bum, 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 bum. Like you like barely hear, and you hear those little, like you hear Ray's theme comes in at one part and that is really nice, and mm-hmm. like that is a good part. It's right when Kylo's saying, you know, oh, you can't run from me, and you know, everyone, all the girls in the back are screaming, I don't want to. Like,
every girl's like, I'm right here. Hello. I would never.
But I think
I'm literally trying not to move.
That's definitely another thing that's kind of missing there. And to a lot of people's credit, I understand. And you know, when I first came into the land, I was really blown away, and I loved the full immersion, and I love that, you know, it's, you know, in place of there being music in the land, that there's so many sounds, mm-hmm. diegetic sounds happening all around you. But that being said, I really feel like the most, ironically, one of the most effective parts of the land are the entrance tunnels before you even get into the land. Hearing all of that atmospheric music really sets the tone and really gets you in the mood. And I feel like if I were to pick a couple of places where you do have music, I feel like right in front of Rise of the Resistance, you do need to have music that sounds like the kind of music that you hear like when Leia's debriefing the rebels on mm-hmm. Hoth, or the music that you hear when Luke's about to go off to fight the Death Star. You need to hear things like that, that kind of, okay, I know where I am. It brings me back. You know, maybe in the walk to the market, you don't hear anything and you just hear the sounds of the forest, but you need that there. Mm-hmm. You need Cloud City music when you're standing in front of the Falcon, in front of Smuggler's Run. You need that in those places. I understand, you know, the logic of having some places that, you know, the atmosphere is more natural. But I think it would be really cool because, you know, I'm kind of coming at it from an angle of, like, as someone who plays video games, you walk into a new area and then suddenly the music for that area mm-hmm. starts to play. That would be really cool, in my opinion.
And I'm someone like, so maybe not everyone's like this. When I go in, I'm not like, I'm blah, 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 this character I made up. I'm like, no, I'm Princess Leia. I'm going in. I have the Death Star plans. So it would be cool to have like that, more of that aspect of like, oh, you pick a character that you like, as opposed to like, you're blah, 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 and you're coming from this planet. And yeah, it's,
you're you.
I mean, I'm like, I don't want to be me. Yeah.
To me, you're like, yourself. I love the cantina music, I will say. Mm-hmm. Like, I genuinely think that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Slaps. I listen to that playlist and I think it's really fun. Like, and it adds a lot to that area, but you really only hear it inside the cantina, like directly outside. And I think there's like that a speaker bathroom by the Ronto Roasters.
Can't you hear that?
The bathroom does, but I think it has a slightly different. Yeah, the radio version. It's like there's a little bit more talky.
And they have Pablo Hidalgo come on, which is cute. And it's so obviously Pablo Hidalgo, which is great.
It's really fun, but it's still not enough to quite, like, you know, transport me mentally. Mm-hmm. You know?
Disney, if you want to hire us, we're available.
I like it. Disney, I do like it. I just want to say, Disney, I really do like it. But it's like, because I love Star Wars, and I would just love, it's like a Star Wars thing. Mm-hmm. You know?
My friend put it really well when he and his girlfriend went. They were both saying, you know, this is a really, how do they put it? They're like, it's a really good outline. It's like the best outline they could have made. They just didn't put anything into it. So put stuff into it. And it's like, you know what? Like, yeah, I can agree with that. Because, like, I feel like the layout of the land and stuff, like, they really did nail. They really did do a good job with a lot of that stuff. It's just, you know. Well, hopefully in the future we'll see some more additions and stuff.
Like, the stages that they have all around. I mean, I know they were supposed to have shows going on up there. That would have added such a cool layer of, like, just the smugglers running across and, like,
I was thinking that we were going to see, like, yeah, like, stop right there and, like, you know, explosions and lasers firing off, and you were going to see Vi being chased by stormtroopers. And it was just like, if you were standing in the right place, you caught it. But instead we have her crouched behind the Coca-Cola stand.
Yeah. And then people going like, is that a girl in a cosplay?
Yeah,
we don't know who she is.
Who is that?
Yeah. Why are there no wanted posters?
Allison? We're connected.
It's because it's like the same complaints. Posters. Like, it's like, hello?
It's just the obvious stuff. It's the super obvious stuff. It's so weird.
Just speaking of things they can fix and things we want to see, I guess that would be the final idea, is like the Galactic Star Cruiser. Mm-hmm. Like, do we think it's going to be amazing? What do we hope it is?
No.
You're like, look at what they've given us so far.
If they did what they said, yeah, it would be amazing. But looking at what they said with Galaxy's Edge versus what we got, I just feel like it's going to be a bit watered down.
A bit? I was like, whoa.
A bit watered down.
A bit.
Like, yeah, would it be cool if, like, you're going to dinner and then all of a sudden someone pulls you aside and you're like, we're having a rebel meeting or, you know, Rebel Alliance, and you say a special password and you go into the secret room. But that's not going to happen. Like,
well, that kind of commitment and, like, interactivity, I feel like, requires people to commit in a way that, especially on, like, a Florida trip to Disney, I just don't think everyone's going to be 110%, like, there. You know what I'm saying? I will be there.
I think if they make it a premium, like, they were kind of, like, people were thinking that they would, I feel like once you make it a premium, then the experience, they're going to know that they need to go all out with the immersion and the role play. And they know that pretty much 99% of the people that drop that amount of cash are going to be along for the ride.
Yeah.
Because Galaxy's Edge is something that, like, you know, is always going to be at Disneyland and won't be everyone's first pick. It will be something that people just walk into. So your grandma or your grandpa coming in from like I was saying before, from Idaho, walking in going, oh, is this a new Star Wars thing? You know, they're, if some device like, come over here, you're part of the resistance, they're going to be like, don't touch me, lady. but no one's going to do that after dropping $3,000 to go to a Star Wars hotel. They're just not. You know, why would you when you can spend $300 to go to one of the cheaper hotels because you're only there to stay there for the night for going to Walt Disney World? That's what I'm hoping, at least.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a level of commitment and acting from everybody.
Argument for argument's sake. I mean, there are people who pay a lot of money in Walt Disney World to, like, not care that they're there. I saw some crazy things when I stayed at the Animal Kingdom Lodge of, like, people who, like, didn't care about the animals. They weren't really – I was like, why are you here? It's expensive to be. But maybe, like, that will be the level of money to offset that in between non-committal level of
Everyone wants Westworld, you know, however they can.
I know I do.
Yeah, I do
as well. Amen to that.
Go there and Jimmy's there.
I want my Grand Theft Auto entire open world experience.
You run around in, like, every nook and corner.
I mean, sadly, you know, Galaxy's Edge feels too much like Grand Theft Auto because it's a lot of just, I can't go into this door. Okay. I can't go into that
door.
Oh,
my God. I do have to say publicly, I don't think I've mentioned that often enough anyways. My favorite place to take a picture, my favorite wall, that one, like, across from the cantina where it's, like, lit up all around it, it's been covered with a trash can. At least it was for, like, the last, like, 2 months, because it, like, I guess it opens if you probably push it hard enough. But, like, you couldn't put a sign there. You can do something. It's, like, the best picture spot, especially, like, with the lighting after, you know, the sun goes down. And they just cover it with two trash cans. I'm like, this is your new land. It's two trash cans?
It's also crazy to think about, you know, going back to the original Star Tours, you know, you have that droid room scene where you've got the two little droid animatronics talking to you and all the moving parts are moving over your head.
The best music.
Stuff. And that stuff is there in Galaxy's Edge, but then you get to the actual queues for these rides, and Smuggler's Run is just a garage. And then you see one really cool animatronic, which is great. But then it's just the Falcon, and they're like, "Aren't you impressed? It's the Falcons." Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, but yeah, the rest of
Hondo?
That was kind of like you see Hondo. That was pretty cool, right? And it's like, yeah, I did.
I don't really know him that well, though.
But you know, compared to original Star Tours, which imagine that, you know, you walk in the room, giant Star Speeder right in front of you. R2-D2, C-3PO, chatting it up, characters you know, giant screen, walk into the next room, two fun droids having banter, all of these moving parts around you, original
great
music,
safety written, video.
Great safety video, you know, all of this stuff, and then, you know, Smuggler's Run is a garage, and not the same.
But. I still can't believe there's nothing interactive or moving in, especially in that first room when you finally get inside, and there's like, it's like trash. There's like some like cards on a table. Is
the best hunk of junk in the galaxy.
And that's my complaint too about Rise of the Resistance, is they're like, you know, have fun walking through all these dirt tunnels, because you should be happy to have gotten to this point. You should be relieved that you got to this point.
You should
point.
Be grateful to you see should be pizza grateful. Ovens.
You yeah. should be grateful.
It really
yeah, the
is
pizza
dirt
ovens.
Tunnels.
Yeah.
It really is. I think, like, you definitely lose a lot of charm and, like, magic in, like, the lie of, like, being immersive, you know? Which is, like, I want to be immersed, but, like, you got to give me something that's not realistic, because if I just want something realistic, I could like go to the desert or like to the garage, like, and put my car.
You could go
in
to Tunisia and see the set from Star Wars right now.
Yeah, like it's probably the same amount of money it'll be to. I don't know about
Tunisia. Crazy
to
me that Ghost Town of Knots is more fun in a lot of ways than Galaxy's Edge because they actually, I mean, like, it's so obvious. Just steal what they're doing and just. You've got millions of writers that's at Lucasfilm. You've got millions of people involved in the story department. Just do exactly what Ghost Town does, which is write a new storyline for the summer and just commit to that storyline for that summer. And then the following summer, you can evolve the storyline and maybe that'll motivate, like, you know, maybe this summer you wouldn't have the Mandalorian characters, but then maybe next summer you can bring one of the Mandalorian characters and wrap them up into the Batuu storyline.
Yeah.
You know, and then that way you actually flesh out characters like Vi Maradai and any generals that you have, first order generals that you have in the land. It's been proven to work, you know, and, you know, just like with Helix, where Star Wars and KISS were things that were proven to work, and Helix worked, you know, just come
don't
on.
Don't need
Allison.
To reinvent the
come
wheel,
on.
Busy.
You know, Allison, I've got a great Baharnath costume that you could put on.
Oh, I would love that.
You know what? Actually, that will work. People will be more attracted to you.
Yep. Oh,
that's
true.
Proven in the documentary.
It's the height.
The braids.
It's the
height of luxury.
The mystery. The
I almost choked. I'm glad that you brought up the braids. I'm glad someone finally brought up the Baharnath braids, because
oh, I noticed
they are glorious. They are
when
glorious.
She said she watched it multiple times, she was not lying.
I am a fan.
She watched that second viewing was to take notes, I see.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, I started a third, and then I had to go to work, and I was like, dang it. But after
so
this,
we will
I'll watch
pick
it a third
up
time.
the secondary complimentary podcast to this in a year or two after we experience the Galactic Star Cruiser.
Well, I'm just going to be texting Allison like, can you ask him about this? Can you ask him about this? So do we have any final thoughts on Helix or Star Wars or may the Force be with us?
Well, I had an idea on an addition that you can make to Galaxy's Edge where... And Disney, if you want to chat me up about this, I'm down. Let's do it, baby. where I had two different ideas where it was, and I can't remember what it was kind of inspired by. It was kind of inspired by, you know, like having just almost like a big seated area or like maybe even multiple areas for the intent of like sitting down, either for you're watching a show or you're there for a demonstration. And what I thought would be cool is almost kind of like what they're doing with like the Jason Bourne show at Universal or Terminator 2, 3D, shows like that where, you know, you as an audience sit down, but still you're part of this super immersive experience. And I thought something like that would be really cool for Galaxy's Edge. It'd be super cool if, you know, you sat down for this hot concert for this new band and you had a band like Helix, and maybe during the show it gets interrupted by stormtroopers and then they blast their way out with hidden blasters behind the guitars and the bass, you know, and then they finish the concert. Or, you know, maybe even what would be really cool is to see like an X-Wing demonstration. And at the end, you have the X-Wing actually take off and fly away. And, you know, just, Terminator. I don't know, something like that where, you know, I understand if maybe you don't have the room to make a new e-ticket, but something like that where it's a CD experience, you can get people out of the heat and you can fill a giant auditorium and do a unique show like that. Because Disney doesn't really have anything like that. Mm-hmm. They did back when they had, you know, It's Tough to Be a Bug, Captain Neo, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, things like that. But you don't really have something like that right now. So that would be cool. And if you want to bring back Helix that way, I'm all here for it.
Well, Terminator 2 3D is my favorite all-time thing a theme park has ever made. I love
that's,
that right
that's a good one to pick. Yes, that's an absolutely good one to pick.
John Connor was my first real crush. Not Edward Furlong, John Connor.
Nice.
And it's like, I'm imagining it all now because I could so see every member of that band is like, oh, they're secretly in the Rebel Alliance. And the backstory is they're using the front as a band to like get in places.
To travel through the planets, yes. Easily get through. Wait, Disney?
Disney. Yeah. Helix. Bring back Helix.
Yes. Helix is just such a great name already. Mm-hmm. And you already got the character designs. You already got the logo.
Cool logo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kathleen Kennedy sure loves her white brunettes. So, you know.
I was like, you have to hire me.
White brunette leads. So there you go.
Like any filmmaker, they're just making a movie like where they put themselves in the lead.
Yes.
Like, this is me. I am Ray. I'm a plucky, young, scrappy lady. Yep. So any final thoughts?
Bring back Helix to Galaxy's Edge.
Yes.
That's my final thought.
That's our final thought. Bring back Helix.
Either that or another thing that you could do is, you know, bring it back as a movie or an animated TV show. And then, you know, you can use the space underneath Space Mountain, which is being used for 3D previews of High School Musical, the musical, the series that no one cares about, and actually make another permanent thing out of Tomorrowland again, because Tomorrowland really needs it. You know,
it really
needs a lot of things.
It needs a lot of stuff. And you know what? In this time of coronavirus where tourism is just going to be crushed for the next few years, you know, that's an easy addition that you can make a brand new 3D movie that creates a new IP. You can sell merchandise right next door, right outside the exit of Star Trader.
I mean, even at this point, bringing back Captain EO would be better than what they're doing now.
Huda! You think me beautiful?
Sorry.
Beautiful?
I didn't get to do it earlier. So.
See you later, trash cans.
Oh, God, it's so good.
Trash Can Squad, rise up. Trash Can Squad is going to be the name of
D23.
The Helix crew chat.
Someone needs to dress up as Helix for D23. If D23,
I haven't seen people tweet about that, and I hope those people aren't kidding, because I will absolutely start bawling my eyes out if I see someone dressing up as any of the Helix band members, because that will just one. I guess the way that I'll end this sort of interview, I have a really cool text that I can read to you guys. It's very brief. It was from Gary Kreisel when he finally had the time to finally see the finished film. He texted me after he saw the film, and he texted me, "Matt, a joy and a heartache captured so well. You are a part of this now. Glad to have you. God bless dear Laura. I miss her more than ever." But just that part of him saying, "You are a part of this now. Glad to have you," made me feel so amazingly cool as a fan of Disney.
She joined the Helix Rebellion.
Yes.
Yeah, that we really are the people to thank that this thing did not just fall into complete obscurity, and that Laura's story was told, and that the whole band is now something that can be added to the list of millions of things that we Star Wars Disney fans can geek out about. So, you know, I'm extremely grateful that, you know, we were able to make this movie. Thank you for donating and supporting us. Go watch Helix if you haven't seen it. It's on YouTube, Live from the Space Stage. It's free.
So where can they find you and like your social media? And
My name's Matthew Serrano. So Matthew_Serrano on Instagram, Matthew G. Serrano on Twitter, and then my name, Matthew Serrano on YouTube.
Go watch the Live from the Space Stage and go watch Remain Seated, please, and then tell me how much you love it. and then tell Matt how much you love it and then forward it to me.
Thank you. Yeah.
A special thanks to our Patreons, Mandy, Tori, Sean, Jennifer, Tiffany, Abby, Valerie, Jenny, Wynette, Lauren, Ashley, and Danny. Please visit our website at www.1313harborthepodcast.com. Please email your questions, comments, and episode requests to 1313harborthepodcast@gmail.com. Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on Twitter at 1313harbor and on Instagram at 1313harborthepodcast.
And to all who come to this happy podcast, welcome!